Hey, Bill.
Hello, Matt. It's good to have you back, although I miss your wife terribly.
First of all, thank you for having me back. It is a tradition in my family that on Mother's Day I don't work, and I outsource it to my wife. Just kidding. I know that's how it looked, but I enjoyed the show.
It wasn't on Mother's Day that we taped.
This is true. This is true. And I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed listening to it. And thank you for being a gracious host and, I think, a good conversationalist. So if you didn't see if you didn't see it out there in Blogging Heads world, check it out. Bill and my wife talking about all sorts of things to do with motherhood and parenthood and raising kids. And
the one thing I wasn't expecting us to get into was the crunchy con phenomena. Because I wasn't really sure that you and Aaron actually identify yourselves as crunchy con, but I kind of get the sense that you do.
Well, I think so. And obviously, this is the Roger Ayer book of I think around 2006 that kind of labeled this phenomenon. And basically, what crunchy cons are traditional kind of Kirkian, if that's a word, mm-hmm. To describe Russell Kirk's followers, conservatives who. We shop at Whole Foods and, I'm trying to think of like what the subtitle of Dreher's book is, like Birkenstock Birkians and gun toting organic food growing mamas. I mean, right. That's sort of the thing. And, I did want to, there was one time, Bill, when I was listening to the show when I did wish I could jump through the iPhone and intervene. And I think it's a matter of semantics, but I will take this opportunity to point it out. I think you implied at one point that eating slow, I don't know what they call it, like slow food or organic food, or that this lifestyle is somehow unconservative. You know, breastfeeding rather than giving your child a bottle, that these sort of crunchy con things are unconservative. Now, Bill, I would argue that these are, by definition, conservative. The word conservative, obviously, is to conserve the good things about culture, society, the country, whatever. And so I would argue that a lot of modern conservatives who are culturally live in McMansions, eat a lot of meals at McDonald's, that's not conservative. Now, it may be culturally identified with a sort of modern conservatism, but I would say it's either unconservative or at best philosophically neutral. So I think this is a stereotype that conservatives are stereotyped as being a certain way. I would argue that my lifestyle in many ways is more conservative than what you might stereotypically think of in terms of that stereotypical conservative.
No, I mean, I agree with you. So forgive me if I was too glib in the earlier chat. Obviously, the basic act of breastfeeding or buying food from a farmer, there's nothing inherently ideological, I think, about those acts. I think where they've become culture identified that way is some of the related policy debates around those acts. I think the push for laws and policies that support public breastfeeding or workplace breastfeeding, I think those have come more from the left than the right. And they do challenge, I think, a sense of what is, proper conservative behavior in the public sphere. When it comes to food, there's all sorts of issues about, what do government policies, how do they facilitate the availability of organic food? Should we be subsidizing big ag, or should we be actively subsidizing organic farmers, or should we be having government regulations that properly define what organic is? And I know there's a strain on the right that's very much against the agricultural subsidies that has kind of split the Republican Party and the Democratic Party.
I would say, Bill, that first of all, I harbor no animosity because you were using, I think, a shortcut that is what, you know, it's perception is reality. So it's not like you invented this notion. I mean, you were sort of using this cultural shortcut. Number two, I think it is interesting that there is this interesting coalition of people on the left and the right. So there are, like, so let's take, if you read Dreyer's book, Crunchy Cons, I mean, it's like 7 years old now, but everyone should read it anyway. He talks about, like, the homeschool movement, which is populated by essentially Christian conservatives and liberal hippies. The organic food, you know, growing thing is populated by, Christian conservatives and leftist hippies. I mean, so they are sort of strange bedfellows, and people come to it for different reasons. To me, you know, being, you know, close to the land and being, you know, what's more family oriented than breastfeeding? I mean, those are conservative values as far as I'm concerned. At worst, they're philosophically neutral. At best, I think they're very consistent with conservatism. And if you look at some of the regulation, I think, you know, the problem, look, the regulation that favors big ag is wrong. I mean, you know, in Dreher's book, there's a farmer, an organic farmer in Virginia who has a small farm, and he sells to, like, local restaurants. Like, there's a restaurant I like called Restaurant Eve in Old Town Alexandria. And they feature some of his, you know, locally grown food and, you know, chicken or whatever. And in Dreher's book, it says that he is required to have, like, a male and female changing room and all of these things that the government requires him to have. This is a family business. There are only a few people who work there, and they're all related to him. But because of the government regulation, he is required to spend, you know, all of this money to comply with government regulation. So to me, fighting that regulation ought to be a conservative thing.
Well, I think we've avoided the issue of the week as long as we could.
Well, I mean, let me just tease. Go back. If you didn't see it, please do watch last week's DMZ show with you and Aaron. I think it's well worth watching. So
I hope she can come back on for a future purpose. Well, Mother's Day or not Mother's Day.
Well, let me throw it out. You know, I think you guys could have a book deal, Bill.
Hey.
I think, what about a bi-weekly show with the two of you talking about these issues? You know,
Hey.
And maybe a book deal. You know,
if you want to buy a TV station that gives us that deal, I will happily.
This is a blogging heads idea. It's a blog.
Oh, for blog heads.
It's perfect blog heads. And then I mean, there ought to be some book about, you know, a conservative mom and a liberal dad come together and talk about, you know, how best to raise your kids. Something like that.
That's interesting. We should explore that.
Have my people talk to your people.
Okay. but a lot of events have occurred in the past 4 or 5 days that might put some strains on the tenor of the DMZ, perhaps.
Never.
let's start easy. Because we talked on a past show about, I think soon after Obama was reelected, would there be a second term curse? As second terms generally speaking are pretty horrid affairs, and not a whole lot gets done. And I actually wrote a piece at the week, I think the day before the maelstrom hit, arguing that Obama, that's premature to call Obama a lame duck. People had already started doing that after his press conference the other day, where he was asked, "Hey, after you got beat on sequester and guns, do you still have the juice?" And Obama's answer was kind of mocked as being pitying and defensive, which I thought was sort of an unfair characterization of it, but it seemed to feed that commentary. And Cokie Roberts suggested he was a lame duck, and Peggy Noonan tossed a label around, Maureen Dowd tossed a label around, And my argument was, you know, if you look at the second terms, just look at the Democrats, man. I won't even use Iran-Contra and Katrina to bring up the Republican stuff. But just look at the Democrats. People have to have the same kind of challenges at the bottom of what. How do you get liberal stuff done in your second term? How do you manipulate the system to actually get stuff through Congress? You know, sometimes war is a major distraction with Wilson and FDR, for example, and Harry Truman with the Korea War. Overreach can be a big problem. FDR with court packing. Harry Truman's fair deal was far too much for the newly Democratic Congress to accept. So very little of the fair deal speech got through. And some wounds are just flat out self-inflicted. Like Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, although I think you could argue that with a Republican Congress, you know, he wasn't going to have a great liberal second term no matter what was going to happen. But certainly didn't help. Mike's argument for Obama was, look, he's still well poised on immigration reform, which is a big legacy item. He's obviously wary about being sucked into an impossible war situation in Syria. You can debate whether he's taking the right action or not, but I think you could objectively say he's not trying to rush headlong in, and clearly is concerned that making an error there would drag down the second term, drag down his remaining time. And I had also suggested that he was not going to be that there's little evidence he was going to be touched by scandal or a significant scandal as of Thursday. Now, I would actually still make the case that he's probably not going to be touched by scandal. None of the things that are swirling out there right now actually tie back to him. Putting aside that argument, I think you could also say that why there often is a second term curse is if you hang around long enough, stuff happens. You know, things out of your control are going to happen. You know, someone somewhere is going to do something dumb, and that's going to be a distraction to you. And that's why, you know, presidents often, reform presidents, want to get their stuff done as fast as possible. You know, the opposite side is always saying, hey, you're ramming it down our throat. I got to read the bill. And a forward-thinking president is going to say, look, I got limited time. Stuff happens. I got my moment. I got to make my moment. And, you know, he's trying to push hard immigration still, and Rubio's out there, you know, understandably saying, look, I can't get this through unless conservatives believe we've done this in a deliberate fashion. But there's a tension there as far as getting it done is concerned. And I'll leave open the question whether I think this hurts the immigration reform effort or not, but I do think to the extent there is a second-term curse evident here, that's why. It's just because eventually stuff happens to you. But I do think the jury's out whether it's actually going to upset, if it actually takes him off of his path to getting his agenda done.
Let me raise a couple of other reasons. I think you're right, and there are other reasons. I mean, there's the hubris reason. There's the loss of staff that were with you, loyalists in the first administration. But let me raise a couple others. One is sometimes scandals happen because of things you did to get reelected. Nixon being the obvious example. He would have won by a landslide anyway. Watergate was part of a re-election, you know, the creep committee to re-elect the president.
Right. But totally unnecessary.
Right.
A self-inflicted wound to getting re-elected.
And some of the things that the Obama administration have gotten in trouble for also appear to be related to the re-election effort. Benghazi, for example. Bad things happen, horrible things happen, and this would be a case potentially where the cover-up is the crime, using the term loosely.
That is one narrative of the events. I wouldn't say that is a definitive conclusion of the impetus of these events.
No, we don't. Nothing is. This is all, you know, subject to debate, and we don't know yet. But from the conservatives, you know, the perception that conservatives have is that Obama was worried about being reelected. And remember, Benghazi happened on September 11th. And so this is like, you know, right before the general election. And Romney, I don't know when that first debate was, but Romney was, there was a time when Romney was riding high. I think that was a little bit after this, probably in October. But so it was close enough to the general election to be very dangerous politically. And the conservatives believe that the terrorism angle was downplayed intentionally because Obama had this narrative going that, you know, he had defeated defeated terrorism, he killed bin Laden, and that the fact that he, you know, didn't protect an ambassador, didn't promptly order in help to help this ambassador, all that could have doomed his reelection. The other one ties into the IRS scandal, Bill. As I reported a year ago, this group, the National Organization for Marriage, is accusing somebody at the IRS of leaking Mitt Romney's $10,000 donation to that group, which is supposed to be confidential, to the Human Rights Campaign. And so it seems like there may have been, that this was done for political purposes, that Romney's donation to this group was made public. And maybe it was just to rattle him, maybe it was psychological warfare, maybe it was to embarrass him, whatever. But there's at least a thought that that may have been for political reasons going into the reelection. So I think that's a factor. And then the other thing, Bill, is I think that the media in a second term, there comes a time, and there's been a feeding frenzy lately. And I've seen reporters, people like Joe Klein, who are liberal-leaning reporters, they go on Hardball, and all of a sudden, they've been protecting Obama, mostly, with a few exceptions here and there, for 4 or 5 years. And all of a sudden, you see that it is now in their best interest to sort of pile on Obama. And to, it's like, well, we got the guy reelected, I'm going to make a name for myself now. So something seems different about the way the press is so much more interested in digging things up. Like, they didn't seem that interested in vetting Obama, you know, during his reelection. But all of a sudden, they seem very interested in kind of making a name for themselves and in advancing these stories and ginning up this controversy. I'm not saying it's not warranted, but I am saying their behavior is different than what it was when it, you know, might have mattered to his reelection.
I mean, I think you're seeing, and I don't think it's just, I feel I see shifts in tone on the left, not just from the Joe Kleins, who are always kind of unreliable liberals. You know, they often have taken lots of opportunities to go against the grain and show off their, you know, conservative sides. But also some who I think are more, you know, I mean, you know, Greg Sargent, for example, is probably, often available to at least articulate what the White House is thinking on a subject, and sometimes arguing against what anti-Obama liberals are saying and putting a different take on events. I think it was very hard on Obama, particularly on the IRS thing. Some of that might be a subconscious. Hey, we're past re-election, and so I'm not threatening.
This happened to Bush at some point, you know, maybe around Harriet Myers, when the people who had been looking the other way and defending him, even when on occasion when it was defending the indefensible, like, you know, his failure to veto, you know, spending bills. At some point, if you're a conservative writer, it became acceptable to turn against him. And at some point, it became a good move, a smart career move. And you were no longer afraid of being punished, or of being, of losing, accessibility, and, well,
yeah, so,
I guess it's,
so there may be, you know, either overt or unintentionally cynical reasons why this stuff goes on. But I also think that, I think the Obama administration has been extremely good managing these flare-ups. Going back to 2008 campaign, I mean, they often get kind of kicked around as being too obsequious to Republicans and always bending over backwards to compromise with them. But I feel they've done a near masterful job of dealing with the right wing media machine. You know, Clinton was completely consumed by the drip, drip, drip of Whitewater. John Kerry, you know, did not handle the swift boat thing well. I mean,
I think it is, Bill. I don't think it's the campaign. I think it's Obama, and I think that it's his insouciance, which he's been criticized for being aloof. But I think that when these scandals happen, Obama's demeanor has always been to sort of just dismiss them and to stay very, very calm. And that signals
that's his role. I get that. That's what he does to plow through.
Yeah.
But I also believe that below that, you have a furious effort by staff, and I think this is all on the level, to get a alternate set of facts out to reporters and opinion leaders and bloggers.
All right.
To say, hey, look, don't let this right-wing media narrative, go off to clear the gate.
That's true.
And
that's
never
true,
to
Bill.
Be reined back in.
I think you're right, Bill. But I think in this case,
you know, all three of these were all things I think they just were not aware of occurring. I mean, with the possible exception of Benghazi, they've been kind of containing for a long time.
Well, hang on a sec, because I do want to get to the substance of them. But let me just answer your point about the staff. So, I mean, I think that you're right. The staff has been good at getting counter narratives out. But I want to make the point, because I think it's consistent with Obama's insouciance. I think that if you think back to Bill Clinton, I did not have sexual. I mean, he was forceful. And when somebody denies something or pushes back on something, that keeps the news going, right? And so Bill Clinton would sort of keep the stories going. It's like if someone trolls you or picks on you and you respond to them, that sort of reinvigorates them. Well, I think Bill Clinton, by sort of pushing back aggressively, and it wasn't just him. Paul Begala is a fighter. You know, James Carville, remember the whole, what he went on TV and said about Paula Jones, you know, you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, there's no telling what you'll come up with.
I think that was Carville. I think that was Carville.
But my point is that's really colorful and really aggressive, and I think that keeps stories going. Whereas, I agree.
The strategy
of the whole Obama campaign has been to sort of, oh, this is no big deal, to mock it. It's not even worth. And behind the scenes, they will start to sort of subtly change the narrative.
I think that's right. But now you might not agree with this, but I think there's a big difference between those two scenarios in that Clinton was lying. And I don't think Obama is lying.
We don't know yet. I mean, you know, a lot of people believed Bill Clinton when he said, you know, things.
An accusation. I've, in the worst telling of this story, there's a no hint of any evidence that Obama directed the IRS to do this, that Obama told Holder, go seize AP phone records, that Obama personally went into the Benghazi talking points discussion and said, take out Al-Qaeda, whoever does, I'm running for re-election, people.
Well, did Nixon have to order the burglaries or the break-ins? I mean, we don't know where this story is going to go. And it may, look, I think that, you know, there's a spectrum, like worst case scenario, Obama's this Machiavellian figure who ordered everything. Best case scenario, these were just mistakes that happened made by bureaucratic snafus, right? And then, right. I think what everyone's sort of settling on is that there's instead if you're a Republican, there's a culture of corruption that it happened with a wink and a nod. Will somebody rid me of this, meddlesome priest? And on the Democrats' middle scenario would be, that Obama was just out of the loop and sort of bumbling. He just didn't know, and mistakes were made.
But this is my other big question to you is, and let me ramble for a second before I let you answer. I mean, I think there's a legitimate question, a political question to ask. is it worth it? Does pursuing scandal politics make sense for the aggressor party? I think this cuts both ways. I think it's fair to ask, did it make sense for the left to go after Bush on Valerie Plame, for example? That, I'm not talking about the merits of the case. I was very aggressive about that myself. I think that Rove should have lost his security clearance over that at minimum. But did it really help anything politically to prioritize that as opposed to focusing on policy issues? Did it really help Republicans to focus on Clinton and Lewinsky? Did it really help did it help liberals to focus on Iran-Contra? Did it start to like Michael Dukakis? So I think it does raise the question, does it make sense to pursue? And I think part of the calculation comes into effect, do you really think you have something here? I mean, if you're going for scandal politics, you're going at the head. You're trying to take out the king. Otherwise, you're spinning your wheels. I mean, my slight digression. I used to teach SAT prep for Princeton Review, and people make careless mistakes with math questions all the time. You misread something. Your scratch work is messy. But usually when you do that, the answer you get is wildly off relative to the actual question. And so one of the things you say to the student is, okay, look at your answer and look at the question. Like, do these things even line up? If one train's going 20 miles an hour and the other train's going 30 miles an hour, their average is not going to be 529. Like, if you got that, something went wrong in the process. So go back and rethink it. I think at least behooves conservatives to say, this narrative that's being put out there, does it really make sense? If you're so desperate to be reelected, does it make sense to go after the Alabama County Tea Party and not Crossroads? What do you get out of that? On the whole Benghazi narrative, like, why it would be hard for Obama to say, okay, this, or we're going to go kick their ass right now. Why would that be hard to do? So I feel the basic, from my perspective, the narrative doesn't make any sense. Now, from the conservative, obviously you conservatives don't agree, but I think that's a gut check to say, do we really think we got a thread to pull here and it's worth putting everything aside? Now, you're not in this camp, Matt, but if I'm a Rush Limbaugh and I hate immigration reform, and I think it's going to be a disaster for the Republican Party, does it make sense for me to put that issue aside and focus on this? Is there more gold here to dig? Or I'd be better off saying, I got to rally the country to stop this immigration bill because that's what's really deadly. Because I think you could argue that this is going to help immigration reform, that the conservatives are distracted. They can sneak this through without anyone really noticing.
That's the point that Mickey Kaus made that point last night at the BuzzFeed Brews, which I did not attend, but I watched on live stream or something. So that is an interesting point, that this could inadvertently help pass immigration reform. I think, Bill, we can debate whether or not something is smart politics for the Republican Party. I'm less interested in that than I am in what should journalists be doing. And I think that we shouldn't have that political consideration. We should be seeking the truth. And I think there are very serious charges here, and I think that if someone, whether it's the president having relations with an intern, or somebody in the administration leaking the name of an agent, if we do not pursue that, and if people are given a pass on that because it's not smart politics to pursue it, then we are encouraging this culture. And we are saying that powerful people, the rules don't apply to them. And so I think that it is in everyone's best interest for there to be watchdogs and for there to be people looking into these things to see if there is a there.
So we'll take the IRS thing though. Here we have this. We know about the IRS thing because we have in our government already you know, taxpayer-paid positions called inspector generals who audit. I mean, we have hand-picked watchdogs whose sole job is to dig out scandal of their own agencies. And in this IRS case, you literally have the Obama-appointed inspector general screwing over the Bush-appointed IRS commissioner. And everything we know about this case is because of the inspector general's. This wasn't ferreted out by a journalist. This was ferreted out by the inspector general's office. And so that watchdogging has occurred, past tense. Now, maybe you could say, well, heads haven't rolled yet, so...
The fact that nobody has been fired is insane. But look...
Maybe it's not as bad as that.
But following your premise to its conclusion, anybody who wants to avoid scandal could simply come forward and say, apologize for something. And then, hey, no need to look into it any further, folks. We've already disclosed that something happened. I mean, let me just go through these real quick, Bill, because I think that these are just dismissing the things that have happened in the past couple of days is absurd. So, first, there's the Benghazi story. A U.S. ambassador killed. It appears that there was an effort within the administration to blame a YouTube video for it.
The most recent controversy does not say anything about the video. There's plenty of evidence the video actually was relevant here. I would not treat that as something that's been disproven.
Well, you do agree that Susan Rice did go on 5 Sunday morning shows and say that it was... a video had something to do with it, and it was spontaneous and would not mention terrorism.
I mean, she did not mention terrorism, but there was a New York Times report that came out after all this occurred, which said, interviewing folks on the ground in Libya, said, this wasn't a demonstration, that was part of the original talking, where they thought it might be a demonstration. A spontaneous demonstration, and the New York Times report said it looks more like a spontaneous terror attack because the local militants were pissed about the video. So now you may not put everything on that one report, but
it certainly seems like there was an effort to blame a video made by an American and to downplay the fact that this was a terrorist attack. To downplay the fact that we were unprepared for something to happen on the anniversary of 9/11, and then it seems like there was an effort for political purposes, possibly, to downplay the terrorism angle and to edit talking points, to expurgate references to terrorism, because that would not be helpful in a re-election. Now, who knows? Again, we don't know, but I'm saying these are very serious charges, and I think that there are a lot of things that we should be looking at. Should the Obama administration have pulled the ambassador or at heightened security because it was the anniversary of 9/11? Should they have known that this was likely to happen? Did they intentionally mislead the public, which is a big deal, as you know? And for political purposes, which makes it worse. All this stuff is incredibly serious. It speaks to transparency. It speaks to the rule of law. It speaks to character. And are we taking action? What about not sending in support or help after the firefight began? Just leaving our people sort of hanging them out to dry. Who made that decision? Where was Obama when all this was happening? I mean, there's a lot of questions that I think it's valid. I haven't even gotten to the AP story about essentially tapping the phones.
There's no allegation of phone tapping. It's about subpoenaing phone records. No one has suggested there's any tapping of phones.
Okay. Then I heard wrong. But in any event, the AP not happy. I think that the problem, the unspoken problem here is that this has a chilling effect on whistleblowers, on journalists. And I think going to the IRS story, a chilling effect on political participation. We should be encouraging folks to be involved in democracy. The targeting of conservatives. I mean, I guess my point here, these are really big, big problematic things that I don't think can be cavalierly dismissed.
Well, I don't want us to be, you know, too tit for tat here. We're still trying to play by DMZ rules. But obviously, if that's your belief or your suspicion or your sense that there was deliberate misleading going on about Benghazi that was political in nature, that jeopardized lives and misled the public, if you believe there was deliberate targeting of conservatives by the IRS and a grave abuse of executive power, if that's your belief, then yeah, I understand, you know, politics be damned. We need to root out this corruption and this unethical behavior and make sure that there's a deterrent for future administrations. I understand that. I think it's also very plausible that you just reading the IRS Inspector General report, you know, there is no allegation that this was a partisan targeting. There certainly is, at minimum, some evidence to suggest the IRS got dumped with a very difficult problem of a massive influx of 501c4 groups after the Citizens United ruling, having to deal with a pretty vague law, which is not the IRS's fault. It's a law that Congress passed long time ago, trying to define what constitutes being a social welfare organization, what constitutes being a political organization, how, and the IRS now being charged to enforce that distinction, what kinds of questions do you ask, and who do you ask them to upon application? How do you distinguish who deserves to have that extra scrutiny and who doesn't? Happening at a time when there was a giant influx of conservative C4s. You know, that's what happened after Citizens United. A whole bunch of Tea Party groups decided to make C4s, and liberal groups didn't. So what do you do with that? It's not as innocent as all that. And if you believe it's not innocent, I understand trying to dig more. But you don't get that in the Inspector General's report, at least.
I think that, you know, you may think that I have the most that I have a really skeptical view. I mean, I think that you are going on this with the most assuming that it's incredibly like innocuous and the most forgiving best possible scenario. And all I'm saying is that I think that when it comes to power and that we should. I wouldn't err on the side that all of these things are coincidental. I think that it's probably more healthy that we have a little skepticism and that we have some independent investigation into these things. It seems very curious, Bill. How did Mitt Romney's stuff happen? How did Mitt Romney's personal donations, you know, confidential donations to a group, happen to find their way to the Human Rights Campaign? I mean, there's so many of these things that just seem very coincidental. Somebody, like, okay, it wasn't Obama. Somebody did it. That IRS person should be fired. So far, nobody's fired. Who did it? Somebody, there is a bad actor somewhere that should be held accountable, and there seems to be no desire to root that person out.
Well, I just play a desire right now to find heads to roll. I mean, it's probably bipartisan desire.
I mean, did you see the ProPublica story? The ProPublica story where they would request, you know, Freedom of Information Act information on some of these conservative organizations, and the IRS would send them documents about conservative organizations they didn't ask for, and that they weren't weren't supposed to send them.
I read that story. I hadn't read your story about the Human Rights Group and the National Organization of Marriage Donations. I don't know anything about that, so I'm not responding to you about that. But I did read the ProPublica story. But I think this is an interesting example because the headline of that story is very sinister. They're just doling out, you know, because the issue here is the IRS is not supposed to give out publicly the applications of organizations that have not been approved yet.
Right.
You know, once they're approved, then they're public record. Before they're approved, they're supposed to be private. And so ProPublica asked for, because they're investigating, you know, are these C4 groups on the level? You know, there's a whole aspect of the story here that there is some suspicion that some of these C4 groups are not on the level, that they're doing political activity when they shouldn't be. And so that's worthy of investigation too. So ProPublica is looking into that, and they get a bunch of applications from the IRS, and some of them are orgs that have not been approved yet, and the application should remain private. If I remember the story correct, I believe ProPublica was like, hey, why'd you give us these? We didn't ask for these. And the IRS said, you're right. We should not have given you those.
No,
please
here's what
don't
happened, Bill.
Publish they, that. Give that stuff back.
No, well, here's the thing. A year ago, Jonathan, I think it's Collegio from Crossroads GPS, one of the Carl Rove groups, was contacted by ProPublica for a comment, and he said, "How do you know this? How do you know this? Because we still haven't been approved by the IRS, and yet you have our information. How do you know this?"
Right. Well, ProPublica didn't give the stuff back; they used it anyway.
They didn't do anything about it. They waited until this story broke a couple days ago to ride the wave. So it's not like they caught out the Obama administration when it happened. They used the information they were given for a year
I don't think they really felt that they were being an intentional leak. They
apparently they do now.
That it sounds innocuous. The IRS said, we screwed up. Don't use this.
there's a lot of screwing up. There's a lot of oops, mistakes were made happening. I mean, and it seems to be a lot. And it seems to be happening usually to, donors to Mitt Romney, to conservative groups. So it is interesting.
I am not opposed to investigation. Quite frankly, to go into my comments earlier, I'm actually kind of happy. I don't believe this leads to a pot of conservative gold. I think this is going to be a big waste of time. So I have no problem. I mean, certainly from a governmental standpoint, if questions are being raised, it should be investigated. Congress should have hearings. Inspector General should dig in. I got no issue with that.
Let me just say, I think some of the stuff that's already happened that we know for a fact, and I this is such a hackneyed thing to say, Bill, but you'll forgive me because I think it's entirely true. If during the Bush era it came out that the IRS was targeting progressive groups, what kind of shitstorm do you think?
This did happen. was a story, but there was a story about the NAACP being gone after in October 2004, right before Election Day, and people were pissed off about it. There was a story also in 2004 about the All Saints Church.
About Karl Rove firing some like district attorneys, which was completely in his right to do. Not in Karl Rove's right, but the Karl Rove was accused of spearheading it, that Bush fired. Were they district state's attorneys? I believe
these are the U.S. federal attorneys. I mean, the issue here was that Rove was leaning on the attorneys to dig up voter fraud cases to make Democrats look bad, and some of these attorneys didn't want to do it. They thought there really wasn't any there, and they got whacked. So that arguably was something at least worth investigating if that was
this
on the level.
This story, Bill, we must have spent a year with this on this story.
We're going to spend a year on this new one.
Think we are? Do you really? I would not be surprised if this goes away. Maybe I'm like the opposite. Maybe I'm like pessimistic or something. I wouldn't be surprised if this story totally goes away. That the press.
We're going to spend more time on this than when the IRS went after the NAACP in 2004. Because there was some upset about that, but it wasn't this level. It wasn't, I mean, people weren't completely beside themselves. I mean, granted, maybe there were more targets with Bush, and so this got kicked down the list. But, I mean, and look, I think the fact that this did happen under Bush, and, look, and there are people that blame Bush and said this is part of the rogue operation, all that. Yeah, I think it arguably buttresses the point that the IRS is a pretty independent agency with a lot of career civil servants that just try to do their jobs. And they're unfortunately put into a lot of sensitive situations that make them look bad sometimes. But again, if you don't believe that sanguine interpretation, by all means have the investigation. I don't have an issue with that. I just think that conservatives might want to think about, do they really think they have a thread to pull here? I mean, obviously, I think a lot of folks are convinced that they do. I would be more paranoid about having. I mean, I think with the Benghazi, for example, I think you do have these hearings where House Republicans take, you know, selective data points and selective witnesses to draw up a story and not do a more detached and objective fact-finding mission. So you see some hesitancy on the part of White House, not just this one, but others saying, I don't want to walk into a rigged game here. If we're going to actually go find the truth, fine, I'll be happy to provide people. But if this is going to be a big setup, then I'm going to be a little more wary about it. So I don't like it when you don't have all witnesses and all evidence being aired at the same time. But putting that aside, I mean, hearings are good. Investigation is good. Transparency is good. And I would be more nervous about it if I thought there was going to be a lot of ginned up stories with incomplete information timed before an election to screw Obama's reelection. That would worry me a lot more. We are past that point. I don't think this is going to upset his agenda. I think there's a whole lot of momentum on immigration reform in particular that's bipartisan, that getting upset about IRS or Benghazi or the AP doesn't change Marco Rubio's calculation or McCain's calculation or John Boehner's calculation. So I don't feel like that's going to get in the way of that. So that puts that takes me off the ledge. But as a general matter, yes, investigation is good and truth is good. And let's be sure we get all the information here. But if that's going to be the case, let's be an open mind. I think it's possible the investigation may show that it's not the biggest scandal of all time. That is a possible conclusion of all this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think that, my default position is we should, try to find out what happened. These are really serious charges. And if nothing happened, nothing happened. And if something happened, then the public has the right to know. And journalists should be, challenging the powerful and what is afflicting the comfortable and comforting the afflicted. And so I think that's healthy. I agree with you and Charles Krautheimer and others, Bill Kristol, who have said that Republicans should be very careful how they play this. You shouldn't be fundraising off of it. And, there's a chance that there could be a backlash if it appears you're trying to score, political points rather than trying to figure out what actually happened. And so I think that is important. I do disagree with you, though, in downplaying the potential ramifications if there is something there. I agree with you that it won't have much of an impact on the second term, because I think the second term, the only thing he was going to pass anyway, if anything, is immigration reform. So I don't know that it matters that much. It obviously could affect Hillary Clinton's reelection if there's, things come out about Benghazi. It obviously could affect Barack Obama's legacy and reputation, which I think, as of, a few days ago, he would have been thought of as a very good president, like him or not, like his policies or not, because he got stuff done. He killed bin Laden. He passed Obamacare, whether you like it or not. So I think that this could tarnish his legacy, depending, and I think it could have ramifications on 2016.
We will find out soon enough.
Okay, a very I guess when you and I have heated conversations, it's still kind of tepid compared to some people. But not really a DMZE kind of show today. A little bit.
Oh, yeah, I perhaps was more animated than I thought I would be. But I don't think, I mean, look, I think you're being on the level here. I think you are legitimately upset at what you think went down. And you're basing your actions accordingly. I don't get the sense from you that you know there's really nothing here, but it's in your political interest to kick up dust about it. You know, I don't think that's where you're coming from. And it may be as well that where most conservatives are coming from.
Because if there's nothing there, it's probably not in our best interest to kick up dirt about it.
Right. I have my suspicions about Daryl Issa. I don't that guy plays on the level. I think it'll be interesting if this does peter out or wherever it goes. It'll be interesting to go to. I mean, if it doesn't peter out, if it becomes this giant, you know, cancer on the presidency, obviously we're going to keep talking about it. If it does peter out, it's going to be good, healthy to look backwards and say, hey, you know, what didn't make sense for us to focus on this so much? I mean, my point about that, to be clear, is I think it totally makes sense for people for government officials to investigate things when questions are raised. I think that's a given. I think there's a separate question. If you're an outside conservative activist or pundit, does it make sense for you to keep up a drumbeat about it? Or does it make more sense for you to focus on immigration or focus on healthcare or focus possibly Obama's climate regs are being, you know, worked on? Should I be focusing on that more and just let the investigators do their job and see what comes out of it? And I think the lesson the left took after the Swift voting was keep up the drumbeat, otherwise the pressure to investigate might fade. And we want to keep and you go up the works. Maybe you distract. You make it harder for the president to get their agenda through because you're taking oxygen out of the room.
Let me ask you a question, Bill. What was the big deal about Watergate? I mean, should we have really impeached? The country went through a lot. Obviously, did it warrant what Nixon did? Did it warrant, you know, essentially removing him from office?
Well, I mean, there's law breaking that occurred on his staff, and he didn't own up to it and reprimand those folks. He chose to cover it up. I mean, that's what happened. And so there's a principle there that if the president breaks the law, that person really should not be in office anymore. So in that respect, yes, I think that resolved itself appropriately.
Well,
in my view,
did Bill Clinton perjure himself?
Well, this was the argument the Republicans said.
Lied about sex.
This really isn't about the affair. It's that he perjured himself in testimony, and that's breaking the law. And we shouldn't have a lawbreaker in office. And I've argued this point in the past because I think there was an argument from the left at the time that this does not rise to the level of high crime and misdemeanors. You know, this is kind of penny ante stuff. And my point always is, you know, the person, the institution that decides what constitutes high crime misdemeanors is Congress. They can choose whatever they want to be high crime misdemeanor. If they want to conclude that perjury is sufficient to impeach Clinton and convict them, they have every right to do that.
I guess what I'm getting at is Watergate has become, in our minds, this huge, huge thing. What did the president know? When did he know it? Woodward and Bernstein. I'm not a crook. All those things. Mistakes for, you know, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, I know that, you know, it's not smart for Republicans to, like, make the analogy with Watergate, but it seems to me that the things that the Obama administration are accused of are much worse than, like, burglarizing the Democratic headquarters, you know? Like,
if true.
I mean,
if that's actually true.
Is it that big? If true. I mean, yeah, if true. But I'm saying, like, I guess, like, if we're going to be, like, really forgiving and cavalier about it, then, okay, Nixon probably shouldn't have been forced to resign. But if we've decided as a country that, like, transparency is important and being on the up and up with the American people is important. And then I think we need to look into these sort of accusations.
Well, I would not be, if I believe what you were saying about Obama is true, I would not be cavalier about that. Those would be very serious crimes. That would be impeachment worthy. I just don't think that's what actually happened. In the Clinton case, Clinton's sort of a weirder case in that, you could argue that, yeah, he kind of broke the law there. You know, he didn't really, he used incredibly limber verbal gymnastics to just barely be technically true.
Right.
I think that's kind of more of a judgment call. I think you could make the case that, look, you're the president, and I don't care how small it is, you broke the law, you shouldn't be there anymore. You can make that case. I think Republicans tried to make that case, just most of the public didn't buy it, and they're fearful for a backlash. But they have a right to kind of make that sort of case. I think you are right now many, many steps away.
Right. Well, we don't, again,
from making a serious case that Obama broke the law.
And the caveat being, we don't know where this is going, but we do nothing if not speculate here, Bill. So let me just say this: if it turns out that the Obama administration, let's just look at one of these three scandals. If it turns out that they knowingly downplayed the terrorism angle, knowingly misled the public into believing that there was another motive for the attack, gave Susan Rice edited talking points to mislead the American public. If that turns out to be the case, I would probably argue that much more concerning to me than Bill Clinton getting a Lewinsky, you know?
Even in that telling, I'm not even sure if that would constitute a crime. Maybe it would. I mean, but I don't know what crime would be committed there.
So I guess my point is, like, is again hypothetical here as of today, but is misleading the public and lying to the American public and misleading them about something incredibly serious like Benghazi worse than Bill Clinton lying about sex?
I mean, probably every president has said something to the public regarding a national security matter that was not 100% accurate. So you might risk holding a standard there. That would be very hard for most presidents to be. Again, I'm not even saying that I think your narrative is accurate, but I'm just saying just taking it at face value if it was.
That might be a really tricky standard to hold people to. Yeah. This is an interesting dorm room debate to be had. I won't engage in any more hypotheticals.
So I decree this show within DMZ boundaries. Maybe you don't. You feel we violated something. I feel we stayed true.
I feel a little uncomfortable, but it's an uncomfortable. These are uncomfortable topics.
Pulling families apart, pitting brother against brother.
Right. I'd much rather talk about, what are some of our classics, Bill?
Breastfeeding, farmers markets, those are safer topics.
Farmers markets are good. I tweeted you the picture of me at the Alexandria farmers market this week. And you had a pretty pithy response. You said, I should go ahead and get the bumper sticker that says I'm already against the next war and be done with it.
Just give in. So, forget this whole why I could ever be a liberal junk. Just, join the dark side. Enjoy your arugula.
Yes. Well, again, as I've said a million times, Bill, if all liberals were like you, I wouldn't have a problem.
Except now I'm one of those people that treats giant national security falsehoods very cavalierly.
But you do it out of naivete, Bill. You don't do it out of any sort of bitterness or malice. So I'm okay. As long as you're not running the government, I'm more than happy with that.
I'm still reading Dutch, the Edmund Morris authorized biography of Ronald Reagan. And I'm just at the point when he goes into a grand explanation of why a lot of Reagan's misstatements were not done out of malice and not done out of a deliberate attempt to mislead.
There you go again.
But it almost came, this was before, I think, the court in Seinfeld, but it kind of came down to, it's not a lie if you believe it, and that Reagan sort of believed everything that he was saying. And then he has such a genial nature about him that it went down easy. So,
well, I think that there may be some...
So I'm a Reagan to you is what I think I'm getting at.
Yeah. And I think that Obama, there may be some similarities with Obama. We'll wait and see. But that's the narrative being pushed. Right now, you see Dana Milbank has a story out about, you know, sort of he's out of the loop and you know, so that sort of, I think that's what they're going for now. I don't think the Obama folks are arguing that, like, none of this stuff happened. I think that it's like, you know, he was out of the loop. Government's too big to know everything that's happening. I think that's sort of the meme that's being pushed now.
Well, it's sort of the IRS thing. I mean, I don't think they're doing that with, AP. I mean, with AP, they're sort of like, this is Justice's thing. It is Justice's thing. But the IRS thing is Obama saying, this is totally outrageous, and we're going to get to the bottom of this, and this cannot stand. And Justice is, that's Justice's thing. Let's let them answer that. But I think of all the three we're talking about here, Justice getting a legal subpoena, going through proper channels to deal with a serious leak investigation, I think is the least likely to metastasize into something larger. And therefore, I think that if anything's going to peter out, it's going to be that one. I think everyone wants to get out ahead of the IRS thing now. So there's going to be a huge impetus on both sides to find someone to blame and someone to whack.
And people have suggested, and I think it's true, the IRS story is probably the one that has the chance to resonate the most with the most people. I mean, everybody hates the press. Benghazi happened a while, you know, old news according to Jay Carney. It's a little in the weeds, but the IRS story being targeted by the IRS, they're an easy kind of boogeyman. And so I think that probably is the story that, If anything resonates, that one will.
So we'll end on agreement.
All right. Good stuff. Not DMZ-ish, but it's still a good show.
Till next week, Matt.
All right, Matt. Have a good one.
Take care.